Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning, and today my guest is Dr. Paul Little, who's a medical doctor and he's a professor of primary care research at the University of Southampton in Southampton, England. And Dr. Little was, I guess the term is, lead investigator in a major back pain study conducted in the UK. The results were released in the late summer of 1998. I believe I have that right. Dr. Little, welcome to the show.
Great to be online.
And I wonder if we could begin with just explaining a little bit about what the purposes of the study were and a brief summary of the results of the study.
Yeah, well, I guess we could go into my personal reasons for being interested in Alexander
Sure.
technique in a bit. But I guess in terms of the academic background, just like in the US and the UK, chronic and recurrent back pain is one of the major issues for our society. In the UK, certainly, and I guess it's the same in the UK, it's one of the biggest causes of sickness disability. Mm-hmm. So a huge problem, and it's a huge problem for the health services. So I'm a general practitioner, a physician. I would guess most surgeries I see, we call surgeries clinics, or uh-huh. clinic surgeries,
right.
We would see somebody with back pain, acute or chronic or chronic recurrent. So a huge problem for health services and society. We do know there are some helpful things. So physical therapy, I think, can be helpful. There's some evidence that massage may be helpful and possibly yoga, but not a huge amount of evidence in any of these areas. Also, manipulation, there's probably the most evidence for manipulation, but the absolute effect for people with back pain seems to be moderate, I think, probably for manipulation, it's fair to say. So obviously, we're on the lookout for techniques that might actually provide significant help for our patients. And there was a short-term trial done with Alexander technique showing some benefit, but no evidence of long-term benefit at the stage we were thinking about this. And the Medical Research Council in the UK agreed to fund this study. And what we were looking for is people managed in general practice who'd seen their general practitioners during the last few years with back pain and still had significant back pain. We specified a certain level of disability, and also they had to have it for at least 3 weeks, so it wasn't a sort of trivial recurrence.
Mm-hmm.
So these were people with chronic and recurrent back pain. And what we did was we randomized people, so it was a randomized control trial. People had the four basic groups were normal care, and by that we meant that people could have access to their general practitioner, and the general practitioner could refer to physiotherapists or whoever they wanted to, or provide analgesia. They could provide the normal care that they would normally do for that group of patients. The next group was a group who were offered six sessions of massage, and the idea here was to have, well, a group that actually we thought would help people, at least in the short term, would have the same sort of hands-on element as Alexander technique, but wouldn't have the educational element. Alexander technique is basically an educational technique for people to learn, and provides, if you like, lifelong help in body use. In contrast, massage obviously is designed, if you like, to be a shorter term help for people with back pain. So that's the rationale for the massage group, six sessions of massage. We then had six lessons of Alexander technique. That was designed to be a short introductory course of lessons, and people were then free to pursue further lessons if they wanted to, but they were only paid to have six. And then a good course of Alexander technique was the fourth group, 24 lessons. And again, all of those were paid for by the study. So you've got your four basic groups there. And then we also wanted to see whether there was an additive effect of exercise. And what we did was we asked GPs to provide an exercise prescription. So the basic idea was that rather like a drug prescription, but they would give a patient a prescription that said, I would like you to take 30 minutes of walking exercise every day. And I'd like you to stick this prescription on your fridge, have it in a prominent place. And then, as well as that exercise prescription consultation with the general practitioner, They were asked to come back for a behavioural consultation with the practice nurse. There are nurses in the UK attached to nearly all practices now, and they can often be very useful in behavioural interventions. So that's the basic study design, if you like. So there were four basic groups, and half of each of those groups were randomised to have this exercise in addition. So if you like, eight groups in all. And then we followed people up at 3 months and a year and measured pain and function and quality of life. And what we found was that actually 24 lessons in the technique was really pretty effective. So you had between a 40 and a 50% improvement in functioning, and you had about an 86% reduction in days in pain compared with the control group. So in the control group, there were sort of 21 days of pain over the previous month reported, whereas in the group that had 24 lessons, they reported 3 days in pain in the previous month. So really quite nice results. In terms of the other groups, as we hypothesized, really, massage had a short-term effect at 3 months, but by 1 year that effect had worn off because we weren't providing basically any education for life, whereas Alexander Technique does. And in the six lessons, there was around a 20% improvement in functioning, and getting on for a 50% improvement in days in pain. So again, quite nice results. What we found with the addition of the exercise was that the exercise prescription didn't add terribly much to the 24 lesson group, which is what you might expect, I guess, because the exercise intervention was relatively brief. But the combination of the exercise prescription and six lessons in Alexander Technique was additive. And you got about sort of 70-odd% of the effect of 24 lessons if you had the six lessons and the exercise prescription. And so for the UK Health Service, probably the best bet, if you like, because obviously you want to get the most value for your money input into health interventions, would probably be the six lessons with exercise prescription. And indeed, in the UK, there's an organisation called NICE, the National Institute for Clinical Excellence, which gives advice that interventions that fall below the £30,000 per quality adjusted life year threshold, it's a threshold for, if you like, money compared with the improvement in quality of life, those interventions should be considered at least by the health service, or could be considered by the health service. And what we found was, although obviously 24 lessons was under that threshold and could be considered under £20,000 per quality adjusted life year, in fact the six lessons with exercise was much nearer the £5,000 per year mark, and so really very, very good value for money. So we've shown that both the technique is effective, it's likely to be cost effective, and probably the best bet for health services would be a shorter course of lessons in combination with an exercise prescription. So those are the main results of the trial, and there's been some a couple of follow-up papers related to that. One was an in-depth qualitative methodology. And what I mean by that is that it's basically talking in depth to people to try and understand their experiences, both obviously of the trial and of the technique, and their perceptions of the technique. And what we found there was, although people actually reported quite a few obstacles to exercising, they didn't report as many barriers to learning the technique, partly because it made more sense to them, but also in particular because it could be practiced, you know, during everyday activities or relaxing, and the teachers provided personalised advice and support, which the patients liked. So a combination, if you like, of the quantitative findings from the trial and some nice qualitative findings suggesting actually this is rather a useful thing for doctors to be able to advise their patients to do.
And I think it's probably worth mentioning that this does represent the first really large scale study of any kind done about the Alexander Technique.
That's true.
That up until
to my knowledge, anyway.
There have been, I'm guessing, a half a dozen to maybe eight or nine medical studies out there, but they tend to have all involved small groups. And yours, your study, I guess it meets the sort of academic journal publication standards for a medical study. Would that be correct?
Yeah, that's right. There was an interesting process getting it published, but I probably shouldn't go into that in the public domain. But yes, we got it published in the British Medical Journal, which is probably the target journal for my kind of research. They publish pragmatic health services research that's useful to patients. They have a clinical and a clinical academic readership.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of the key journals, actually. It's one of the key journals in the world, but it's probably the key target journal for my research in the UK. So we were delighted that both the main analysis and the economic analysis both got into the British Medical Journal.
And we should add that apparently the British Medical Journal, whenever they publish an article, produces a video to go with it. And they produced a very nice 12-minute video about the study, and it makes for an excellent introduction to the Alexander technique.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it was a bit of a first for them. I think we might have been one of the very first to do that kind of video on the website. So, and I think they were really pleased with the video. And as you say, it was a very useful example, particularly useful because I think actually something like the Alexander technique does need a bit of explanation. Mm-hmm. I think most people, A, haven't heard of it, and B, would find the concepts difficult to understand unless they had them clearly and logically explained by a good teacher, which
yes,
indeed I think that the BMJ video achieved.
Absolutely. How did you get involved in this study, and have you had Alexander technique lessons yourself? What is your connection with the technique?
Yeah, no, this is an interesting story. My wife, Alison, lovely lady, in her 30s, I think, or might have been late 20s, 30s, I think, had chronic pain, really. She was crying herself to sleep every night, and the sort of standard things hadn't really helped her. And I reasoned there must be something about the way this young lady was using herself that was causing problems. You know, she was too young to be having this kind of pain. So there was clearly a problem about the way she was using her body. That then was sort of mixed with the fact that actually in my youth, well, still I am, I was a very keen amateur musician. I was going to be a musician probably in my mid-teens, and then finally realized that actually it's a difficult profession, even more difficult than medicine, I think. So gave that up, but have kept the interest going. And that's in fact how I met my wife. We're both keen amateur musicians. And I don't know what the case is in the United States, but in the United Kingdom, there are Alexander teachers in the acting schools, the music schools, and so forth. So I knew about the technique. I knew it was a technique that was actually very useful in improving functioning. And I reasoned that if it was useful in that context, it would probably be useful for patients with back pain as well. And so I nagged my wife a little bit to have some lessons. And I can be quite a nag sometimes. So she actually eventually did have some lessons, and actually it helped her quite considerably. And she ended up training as a teacher and is now a teacher and regularly sees patients with back pain. And she's got some fantastic stories about the extent to which she's helped people. So it's a quite a lot of personal history there before I ever got round to looking at the academic background and developing the trial.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, in view of the study and the results of the study, what would your advice be to listeners to our program today who are suffering back pain?
Well, I think there are a range of things that they may have tried lots of the standard things, I guess. So they may well have seen a physical therapist, and I think that can be very useful, particularly obviously if you've got sort of chronically weak muscles. They can help strengthen the muscles and help you mobilize and so forth. So I think I wouldn't want to disparage physiotherapy at all. There is some evidence not terribly robust at the moment for the use of yoga, but I think that looks promising. At the moment, there's a large trial going on in the UK, and we'll have more information, but there's at least some promising evidence there. I think massage can be helpful. There's less evidence about that, I guess. And I think manipulation can be helpful too. But having said that, I think our trial, it's likely to provide pretty robust data here. This is a large trial with lots of teachers across lots of practices, with a pretty important and impaired group of patients. And having got the results we've got, I think one of the things I would recommend to patients is I would consider having some lessons in the Alexander technique, and I'd have as many as you can afford until you find that you've got a significant improvement. And although we did trial 24 and we don't know what the improvement is between 6 lessons and 24 lessons, I guess a lot of people do get significant improvement before you get to 24 lessons.
Oh, that's absolutely the case, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we got improvement at 6 lessons. Right. Obviously, it wasn't of the magnitude of 24 lessons. So I guess somewhere in that range between 6 and 24 is going to be what most people can afford and will help them. And in terms of the cost, just in the UK, 24 lessons would cost you about, I don't know, £700. I'm not quite sure what that is in dollars these days, about $1,000.
About $1,000, I believe, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for the price of a holiday, I guess, you can get lifelong help with your back pain. So I think that's a pretty good deal if I was going to invest money as a back pain sufferer. It would be nice if the health services around the world took up Alexander technique, but being realistic, they may not do that just yet.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, another group that I think we should address are primary care physicians. And I'm thinking particularly of doctors outside of the UK. Generally, I would say in the UK, the Alexander technique is probably better known than almost anywhere else. But for doctors in America or in other countries where technique is not as well known, what could you tell them that would be useful to them when someone comes to their office with back pain issues?
Well, I hope they would know about the sort of range of things that are likely to be effective that we've just talked about. Mm-hmm. But specifically regarding Alexander technique, I mean, obviously, I'd hope they'd be aware of the research that's been done on this, that it is something useful for their patients. They then have the practical problem, you know, how do I find a local teacher? And I guess I'm not sure about the mechanics in the United States. In the United Kingdom, the best thing for a patient to do is to get onto the Society for Teachers of Alexander Technique website. Mm-hmm. And there are a list of teachers that are registered with STAD. I believe that there are sister organizations in the United States.
Yes, there are a couple of professional societies in the States that publish teachers' lists. And also the website alexandertechnique.com has a whole section on how to find a teacher anywhere in the world, and including links to all of the relevant professional societies. So if you want to find a teacher, it's actually not that hard to do.
Okay,
you do want to find a qualified teacher for sure. And
that's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I mean, yes, you want a teacher who's undergone a recognized a good course. Mm-hmm. And the other bit of advice I would give to professionals, because this is from sort of personal experience in my family, you know, like everything, you know, there is going to be variability among teachers. There's variability among doctors. So you'd expect that. But two simple things that they could tell their patients are, find a teacher who's undergone a recognized course of training, and you'll be able to do that, obviously, through these websites. And secondly, if you go to a teacher, you will know that they're a good teacher if they can both use their hands well, show you what you're doing and doing wrong and how you might be correcting that, and also be good at explaining what you need to do. In other words, explaining about inhibition and direction. And you get teachers that are good at one or the other, and hopefully most good teachers are good at both. But you need to be good at both to be an effective teacher, I think. So good with the hands and good at explaining is a bit of common sense advice that I think doctors should probably tell their patients.
And I think another thing that might be useful to tell a patient is that after perhaps two or three lessons, they would have a pretty good idea if this was helping them.
I think that's right. Sometimes it will take longer than that, having said that, but I think a good teacher will help people fairly rapidly. They won't do a, you know, they won't have sorted the problem in two, three lessons, but as you say, often within a few lessons, certainly within sort of five lessons, you're going to have a pretty good idea whether the technique is going to be starting to help you or not.
And I think probably we should add that the technique, you know, as you said before, it's an educational process. And what a teacher helps you to do is learn to start helping yourself. So yeah. Most people who take Alexander lessons will take a series, perhaps 6 or perhaps 24 or something in the middle. And they may occasionally go back for refresher lessons, but usually they're pretty much on their own and they don't need any more lessons at that point because they have learned how to, in a sense direct themselves.
So. Yeah, absolutely. So the shame about this for all of those Alexander teachers out there is that they're trying to do themselves out of a job.
Yeah.
Well, but I guess there are enough people around with back pain that that's not
yeah,
likely.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Little, is there anything else that you would like to add that we haven't touched on?
No, I think that the issue, I'll mention it briefly, the issue about actually trying to get published is quite instructive, and some of the comments from some of the more rabid members of the medical profession on the website of the BMJ are well worth reading, actually. And I think there is an issue here. I think, in a sense, we've shown it works. Clearly, we need to have more of that data. But we also, I think, need to understand better how it's working, and so I think studies of both effectiveness and also mechanism are going to be important in bringing the medical profession round to this technique, which I think offers patients a huge amount.
Are as far as you know, are there any other studies in the works?
Well, we're planning a few, but haven't got any more money yet. But we're hoping over the next couple of years to generate funds to get the next phase of research rolling.
Oh, excellent. Well, Dr. Whittle, thank you so much for being on the show today. This is Robert Rickover at Body Learning, and today my guest has been Dr. Paul Little, who's a medical doctor and professor of primary care research at Southampton University in Great Britain, and the lead investigator of a major study of the effectiveness of the Alexander technique and other modalities in helping people with back pain. Dr. Whittle, thank you for being on the show today.
You're most welcome.